The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Now, Russia has ordered evacuations on its border region of Belgorod, which neighbours the Kursk region, where Ukrainian troops are said to have invaded up to 30 kilometres in places over the last week. That move by Ukraine is said to have taken Moscow by surprise. But why has Ukraine made this push into Russian territory now? The first time that they've gone over the border since the invasion from Russia on the other side in 2022. Delighted to say it, we're joined by Dr. Patrick Burry, even who's a senior lecturer in security at the University of Bath and a former NATO analyst as well. Dr. Patrick Burry, welcome to the programme.
Good afternoon, evening.
Interesting timing, which is my first thought when this happened last week, that Ukraine have decided to make this push. Presumably this wasn't a short-term decision, was it?
No, that's a really good question, actually. It would have taken an operation like this, which has been successful so far, would have taken months to plan. And if you rewind a few months ago, a couple of things happened. Obviously, it was looking more likely that Trump would be president, and he has said he will force the sides to negotiate when he gets in January, if that was the case. And secondly, the US Defense Secretary Lloyd asked the Ukrainians to postpone an operation. Now, we don't know which one, but it could have been this. And I think that planning, you know, the length of planning and how long this would have happened, would have taken to actually happen, is quite indicative of what the goal may be. And it might be, I think, to hold some Russian territory in case it's needed as leverage in some sort of negotiations.
Because nearly all of the recent focus has been around Donetsk and Russia pushing from that direction as opposed to this area.
Absolutely. And, you know, further south, the Russians had been making slow, costly, incremental gains, but nevertheless, the Ukrainians could not stop them. And it was getting, they were coming under severe pressure. And so this was surprising, even to those of us who watch this very closely. We were not expecting them to commit. The Ukrainians had committed about four to five elite brigades here and backed it up with a lot of air defense and electronic warfare. So they've really thrown quite a force at this. And most of us were expecting for that to be kept in reserve potentially. So it's high risk, but potentially high reward. And I think that indicates, again, an understanding by the Ukrainian top brass that, you know, the stakes were quite high.
If Zelensky feels that this is a case of having to have leverage in case the money tap is turned off in a few months' time, this is still a massive commitment of the technology they have, the troops that they have currently, to push up in the way they have into Kursk.
It is. That's what I mean. It's high risk, high reward, high stakes. But look, you know, they've already got, you know, I've seen lead elements at least 20 miles in. That doesn't mean all the forces are, but, you know, some of them are. They're still attacking. They're still going forward. The Russians are saying this is going to be, the commanders are turning up and saying to the rest of the military, etc., this is going to be a hard enough slog to dislodge them. Because they've got the mechanized forces in there, they've reinforced success, and they've put this air defense and electronic warfare bubble over it, which is exactly what you need to do, it becomes quite hard to dislodge the forces. Nevertheless, in the longer term, you know, Russia will bring its, you know, greater forces and manpower and artillery to bear, and you'd expect it to, first of all, contain and stabilize the salient and then to start to push it back. But if the Ukrainians are smart, they'll probably have somewhere in their minds where they think they can hold, actually, before their attacking forces come get too much destroyed, essentially.
Is this partially as well maybe Ukraine looking to split the Russian forces a bit too? Because if Russia have been concentrating on Donetsk and trying to push from that side, you would think if they need to reinforce, some of those troops could well be redeployed now.
That's it, yeah. The Ukrainians, first of all, it was very quiet about what was going on, but they've come out and said, some senior military have said, you know, they've got three objectives. The first is to draw off pressure away from Donetsk, and that would make a lot of sense. I mean, any forces down there that are sent up towards Kursk is going to take them a long drive. It's at least, I think, 350 kilometres. And secondly, to raise morale of the Ukrainians, who've the army in particular being forced back and hard fighting, and also national morale, because, you know, the offensive in 2023 summer didn't work. So it's done that, I think, already. And finally, their objective, as I said, is to bring the fight to Russia, take the territory, but also to sow some chaos and destabilize the Kremlin regime. And again, you know, you'd tick that already and say that's been achieved. So on the operational level, I think it's met many of its objectives so far.
The reports of the weekend were somewhere between 20 kilometers, 30 kilometers now inside Russian soil. How realistic would it be for Kursk to fall? or will Russia be able to now redeploy, maybe just stiffen the rear guard that they have there and actually hold on here?
I mean, like, I think it's less likely course of action at the moment. They are apparently about 30 kilometres away from the nuclear power plant at Kursk, which is just at the fringes of artillery range. But I don't think the Ukrainians are going to be like the Russians and start, you know, artillery barraging the NPP there. I would say it all depends on the Russians, but they're digging in around that power plant, which is west of Kursk. So I'd be surprised if they manage to get towards Kursk. I think you're seeing them attack towards other towns and trying to get behind the Russians, and I think it's a chaotic situation. But over time, I would expect them, that's certainly what we know at the moment, unless there's some sort of collapse of the Russian morale, you know, I'd expect them to start containing the Ukrainians, and then the Ukrainians will be faced with a decision like, where do we pull back to, what do we try to hold, etc.
This power plant that has been on fire as well, both sides are denying that they're at fault here.
Yeah, I mean, the power plant is the one down in Zaporizhia now. That's in old Ukrainian territory now held by the Russians. My reading on that, being a cynic, would be that the Russians have probably done something there to try to deter the Ukrainians from doing anything towards the Kursk power plant, you know, but call me a cynic.
Right, okay. That's for others to decide. the ultimate end goal here, I'll ask you about Iran and the situation there in a moment as well, but the ultimate end goal for Ukraine here, is it a case of now trying to hold on to this area they've taken? Is it pushing on further? What is Ukraine's plan from here, do you think?
It's still dynamic, I think. And of course, they want to do as much as they can. And, you know, one of the things when you're in advance like this is just keep going. If you get around and break through the lines, which has been so difficult for the Ukrainians to do, where the Russians had proper defences and intelligence and reconnaissance covering it, you know, they've found a weak spot, they've got around them. And in many respects, you keep going to sow chaos. But that's got to be balanced against how do you sustain those forces and what's the likelihood of them getting cut off and wiped out, which, you know, as I mentioned, these are good brigades with good kit, Western kit, German tanks, American vehicles like Strykers and Bradleys. You don't want to lose them if you don't have to. So the, you know, caution would be the better part of valor, really, I think, in terms of how far you're going to go in the longer term.
And geopolitics currently in the Middle East, and we're probably going to end up talking about proxy states here as opposed to anything particularly direct, but we've had some US troops that have been injured after a missile barrage that went towards Israel following the murder of the Hamas leader.
Yeah, we have. That's actually a common enough occurrence. It doesn't make the media that much. You know, Iran has been wounding US soldiers in strikes in their bases in Syria and Iraq, etc. I mean, the US and Israel seem to be expecting some sort of Iranian retaliation for the killing of the Hamas commander on in their capital, essentially. What was it, 10 days ago? Iran has not done anything yet. And I think the interesting thing here is they're trying to balance that. The real story here is that Iran, it can inflict a good bit of short-term strategic pain on the West in terms of activating, obviously, the Houthis in the Red Sea and the shipping there at the Strait of Hormuz. Yeah, it can attempt to close, and that would obviously affect a lot of oil supplies, and Hezbollah on the border, the northern border with Israel. So that there, its sort of main proxies. It can do stuff in Iraq as well and a bit in Syria. But it knows, in the longer term, if it provokes Israel and the US too much, that they can essentially destroy most of its conventional military and leave the regime on, you know, teetering internally. So I think it's trying to calibrate. What does it do to restore deterrence with Israel after it killed the Hamas commander on its territory, while not escalating it into a massive war, which it would actually, I think, in the long run only lose. So I think that might explain why they're trying to sort of work out where they go on the escalation and deterrence ladder.
Yeah, not very likely to risk anything direct. Dr. Patrick Bury, many thanks for joining us on the show.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.